strumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song, killing me softly with his song, telling my whole life with his words, killing me softly with his song.
Yo, this is why Clef Refuge
Cat
cries little bass sitting up here on the bass. While I'm on this road, I got my girl L. One time. Hey yo, L, you know you got the lyrics.
I heard he sang a good song. I heard he had a style. And so I came to see him and listen for a while. And there he was, this young boy, stranger to my eyes.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Cold World Podcast. Oh, man, I know I promised you all part two of me and my brother's conversation, which was incredible. It was amazing. But sadly, it got corrupted. I tried to upload it. You know, I was really upset about it. It was a really good show. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think he and I gave a lot of ourselves in that show. That just means we'll have to do it again. But that's why I am doing a show tonight. Yeah, because I think it's good. I kind of miss talking to you all anyway. It was going to be hard going 3 weeks without doing a show and talking directly to you. So I got my favorite scotch with me, the Macallan. My favorite. I love Macallan. On the rocks, whiskey rocks though, not ice. I didn't want it to get watered down, but and yeah, man, I feel like an idiot though. I'm so mad at myself that I didn't do a better job of preserving it, or at least finish mixing it down, getting it ready, and then just, you know, delaying when it was released. I mean, I just learned a lot. So upset about it. It was so good, so authentic. But I get him back on, and I mean, he and I always have great conversations, and I guess I have at least one more week or so before y'all know all my business, because that's what he was definitely doing, going in on all of my business. But what I did get a chance to do today is I got to finish House of Cards. I am a big House of Cards fan. And so I had to rush through it because I didn't want to turn on, you know, Twitter or Facebook and somebody ruin the ending for me, or people talking about what happened. It was, I enjoy House of Cards. I think a lot of folks are saying, you know, because I could turn Twitter back on after I finished it. And I think a lot of folks are saying, you know, the speed of it was different. But I liked it. I like political stuff. I just think they do a masterful job with amazing acting and just beautiful set pieces. So my hat's off to the show. I enjoyed it. I actually thought it was going to end because the original ended after 3 seasons, and I thought it was going to be done, but I enjoyed it. And just being able to relate to some of those people. I mean, these are some diabolical folks. But It's interesting watching people function at like a high level, or with the mistakes they make. You should just watch it. I it thoroughly entertains me. It was a good way to spend my Sunday as opposed to binge watching the HGTV network. I'm just on this house kick. So today and yesterday, I spent a lot of time looking for a house. I think me owning a house or buying a house, it just carries a significant meaning. I think for me, like at this point in my life, I'm just in no man's land, right? I give this speech a lot when I'm out talking to folks or I get invited places, and I tend to give the speech about expectations for me and how they were just so low. And at the time when I was younger, it was like, cool, like, oh, he graduated from high school. Yeah, he got into college. That's great. That's like really good. And then I would get really offended by that, because if I was born into the Romney family, I would be expected to one day be the leader of the free world. And the disparity between what we expect from a poor black kid, from an affluent white kid, is insulting to me. So we talk about that, but, you know, from the moment I got into college, I was just in a different realm than my parents. I was just in a different realm than the majority of people that are in my family or that I grew up with. And you just don't have answers to stuff. So this home buying process is so interesting to me, right? Because, I mean, I got a few folks that I kind of reach out to. Will, who was on the show last week, he actually, you know, he owns his home. And he bought his house in Richmond, but it's just such no man's land for me, and it's such a new experience. So today, I drove around with a realtor, and we looked at a bunch of different properties. Of course, he showed me a bunch of properties at my limit or above my limit. Don't worry, I told him that we need to go way, way below what I got approved for and start there. But there was one house, man. I fell in love with this house. I fell in love with it. And the crazy thing is, so I don't have an issue living in the hood. Like, it doesn't bother me. It's just me. I'm single. I don't have small children. I don't have, like, there are just things that I don't have to necessarily, I guess, worry about when it comes to certain neighborhoods. It just doesn't bother me. So with how Oakland's moving, where they just flipping stuff left and right, you know, I saw it happen to my neighborhood in North Oakland, where it's just a totally different community now. I was looking all over Oakland. I opened it up to everywhere in Oakland. And if I can get a lot of house for a fair amount of money, I'm like, let's do it, because I'm not afraid to be in those places. So I saw this place in the Castlemont community, near 98th on MacArthur, and it was in this little gated area, and I had always seen these homes, but I never saw the inside. I actually really underestimated it, but it was so beautiful. I fell in love with this home, and then I got really frustrated because it's just above my what I can afford. And then I got really frustrated because, I mean, think about it. It seems like there's always something, you know. It's like, what's that thing that's holding you back? So you get, it's that feeling of you so close, but you just so far away, right? And I'm one of those people, I don't like to count eggs, you know, before they hatch. I can't do it. The track record of my life, let me tell you how weird I am. I have multiple degrees, right? And with those degrees, I only celebrated one of them. And that was when I graduated from college, from getting my BA from Cal State Hayward, which is now East Bay. And my parents came out, and my siblings, and we went to dinner. We went to Texas Roadhouse after, because I really liked Texas Roadhouse, and, you know, it was a moment for my parents. But I remember getting my master's degree And I was just so used, just from how I grew up, I was so used to things just not panning out, right? So the last semester of getting my master's degree, I hit a few snags just around like getting a final paper in and getting it approved. And it just didn't feel like it was going to happen at some point. This is like, and this is me being extremely honest. So anybody that's struggling with something, like, I want to be really honest with you in this, because I think that people only see the results and don't really see the work that goes into it, or like just the heartache and the heartbreak that goes into it. So I just thought that it was going to be another one of those things where you get your hopes up for something and it just gets snatched away. So when they told me I passed and I'd be getting my degree, you know, first off, my advisor just wasn't worried at all. I was crazy stressing. I was just like, man, I spent all this money, I spent all this time, and it's not even going to happen. And that's just where my mind went to, because I'm always ready for the worst. It's really a sucky way to live, right? But it's just, that's just the way my life has kind of tracked. And it has me on guard in a different way. So I graduated. I didn't go walk the stage. You know, my advisor, my people in my program was just like, yo, when you going to like send out your invites to people? When are you going to, you know, you're going to tell your parents? You got people from work that's going to come. You going to go buy your cap and gown? I just never did it. I just felt it was just surreal. And I just knew any moment it would get taken away. And so what happens is I was like, you know what? I'm not going to celebrate till I get the paper. Well, your diploma don't really come for 4, 5, 6, 7 months afterwards. So then when the diploma finally came, at that point, it's just like, oh, cool. Let me put this in a plaque and put it up on my wall or in my office or wherever I was going to put it. And I just never celebrated. I just never celebrated because it just didn't seem real. I was always waiting for something to happen. And that's what this process of buying a home feels like. It's like you right there, you doing the work, you get the approval, you work on the credit, you fix all the mistakes that you made financially when you was, you know, trying to take care of family or trying to take care of friends, or the bad financial decisions that you made, and you claw and you dig and you pull yourself out of that hole. And then you go out and you start looking at stuff, and the one that really catches your eye, because I don't really like a lot of things. It's I'm a really peculiar person. I guess I need to just accept that. And it's just above where you are. And you know that it'll be irresponsible. Because I can have it. My bank, you know, the bank says I can have it. The letter of where my finances are says you can do it. But it's just not a smart decision. And it's so frustrating, man. It's so frustrating. It just, because that house is gorgeous. I'll post like a video of it. I just, you know, it really means a lot to me to live in Oakland, as I do work for Oakland. It just means a lot for me to live here and watch these communities go through whatever they go through and walk the same streets that the people that we serve walk. And, you know, it's just something that means a lot to me. But I'm also a realistic person. And if I, you know, I have to open up that search outside of Oakland, but we're not at that point yet. So let me just on that ramble, and because I think that sometimes the perception is things just come easy, and they really don't, man. I think I've always got this moniker of being like a really smart dude, and I'm just not that smart. It takes me so long to do basic things. You know, it's like folks are like, yo, you really dedicated. We always see you working. It's not because I'm brilliant, yo. It's not because I'm like changing the world and creating some crazy algorithm that's going to, you know, be the new Facebook. No, I mean, it just takes me a long time to process things and to like really internalize it. I'm just willing to work really hard. And I posted something the other day, and it focused on discipline and sacrifice. And I just really believe that if I was as disciplined as I wanted to be and willing to make the sacrifices that I've made, that I could damn near rule the world. you can't discount hard work. You can't do it. I played basketball, and my favorite players were always folks that just wasn't super athletically gifted. So, like, Tim Hardaway is, outside of Michael Jordan, Tim Hardaway may be my favorite ball player. And then Jason Williams, the white dude that played for Sacramento, or Mark Jackson. Like, I played point guard, so these are people that I really liked, but I also liked them because they was short and, you know, and their work, you know, Chauncey Billups, like, their work was just a result of hard work. Not saying that the LeBrons and the Carmelo Anthony's didn't work hard or Michael Jordan didn't work hard. They worked extremely hard, but they were just also so physically gifted. They were just specimens. I was like this short kid all through my basketball career. I didn't grow till high school. And I think, you know, the thing that really helped me was that I was just willing to, like, die on that court. And that was just to be a decent player. It just meant more. And that's how I approach work now. I've always been scrappy. I've always been, you know, it's the same mentality, right? Like, I'm going to go into the lane, even though I might get blocked, I might get fouled, I might end up on the ground, I might end up bloody, but I'm going to go. And I'm going to take that contact. And that contact is going to give me energy. That's how I've approached my work and just the things that I want in my life. So, you know, I've said this before. I really feel like I'm playing with house money. I've already achieved in my life so much more than my parents could have imagined, right? And even my siblings probably, because they took different paths in their lives. And so, like, it's with my ambition, it's I'm dreaming about things that I've never seen before. Like, I'm reaching for those types of things, and just the sacrifices that you got to make. I'm blessed for how I grew up. I'm blessed for being able to move around. Like, I think living in the shelter, I think my parents' drug problem, I think going to all the schools that I went to when I was in elementary school, I think those things really prepared me, but it makes you, so I'm not necessarily socially awkward. I think that I can function in a room pretty well, but I enjoy just being alone. I enjoy it because that's just what I did. And so I get energy. It takes a lot of energy for me to work a room. I can work a room. I can work the hell out of a room. That's why I think I did well in politics, or I do well in certain types of jobs. I can make you feel like you're the only person in the room. But I don't recharge that way. I recharge by being alone or going to the movies by myself or going, you know, to out to dinner or alone, you know. So, but I think that throws people off. But also what it makes me do, and I started doing this in college, you know, the things that I sacrificed wasn't just money or, like, opportunities or vacations or things like that. Like, you tend to, at times you sacrifice people, and that's a really interesting thing for folks to understand and for people to swallow, right? Like I like things a particular way. The way in which I need support may be different than how the average person needs support from people. Like, I like to be pushed. I like to be working towards something. And so, you know, my sacrifices in college was my friends was about to, they, you know, they go to the club and they have a good time. I would go with them every now and then, but for the most part, that took more energy for me than what it gave me, and I would just stop going, and I look like I'm acting funny, right? Like, I'm looking like I'm better than them, right? Like, I'm above the club. It's not that I'm above the club. I'm just not getting energy that way, and it just takes more from me. And plus, the schoolwork, I got to spend, for the kid that could spend 2 or 3 hours on it, I got to spend 5 or 6. I got to, like, internalize it. I got to talk about it. I got to teach it to somebody else in order to get it. And so, like, even at work, like, I'm the dude, like, I will stay really late and just go over, like, simple things. You know, I try to retreat. When things are extremely complicated, what I try to do is make sure I've mastered the simplest part of what I'm supposed to be doing. So let's say I needed to give a big speech in front of a lot of people, and I need to evoke a lot of emotion while giving a lot of fact and I need to really make you connect with me, that may be a lot for me to process or for you. So what I just really focus in on is just the most basic things. And I'll just ask myself like three questions. What do I want people to know? How do I want them to leave this? And if they had to say one thing about what I just said, what would that be? And instead of writing a long speech, I just focus on those three things. I jot a list of things down on in my little Moleskine notebook or Moleskine, however you pronounce it. And I go and I speak from there. And it just works for me, but that's just how I process. So, you know, I say that whole sacrifice thing to say is that, I mean, that thing is, that's cost me friends, potential relationships. It's cost me opportunities at times, you know, and I just feel like if I was able to get my discipline where I wanted it to be, I'd just be so much further along. What the hell? Why are you saying all this, Charles? What the hell, right? Because it leads me back to this point. Because if I was just that much more disciplined and maybe made that much more of a sacrifice, that beautiful house that I was fawning over, that I was only off by just a little bit, whether it's time and money, I'd have it. I'd have it. But, you know, it is what it is. No need to be extremely dramatic over it. I'll find something. It's going to happen. I can't see it. I can't picture it. But I know logic is telling me that it's going to happen. I know this. You don't have to tell me. But, yeah. And I think the other thing is I'm just never satisfied. I have tasted an experience of what could be. Look, man, like, dude, maybe I should get my dad on here. My dad, like, I'm just thinking about my parents and what their aspirations were. And I just think about some of the things I've been blessed to be able to do. I have a blessed life. I want to be clear about that. Just because I'm not satisfied, I mean, I'm not blessed. And I don't recognize that. But I look at, like, my parents, they just work. They got to work real hard, man. They got to work real hard to not have much to show for it. And I've seen that reality. I've seen what it does to people, and I just can't have it. That's what drove me, and that's what drove my success with young people for so long, because it's like, nah, man, you got to really – let me help you dream. The first thing I got to be able to do to be successful with you is I got to help you see past where you are. It's so hard to envision a life that you've never experienced, that you've never seen. And so if I could help those kids dream and think past their current situation and then help them build a roadmap to get there and then stay on them about executing that and hold the torch for them and hold that vision, right? Until they are mature enough emotionally to hold it and drive it themselves. Like, that's the secret to working with people. That's the secret to working with kids and, you know, any of the communities that I've worked in. Like, I've been blessed to have some success. I wish I would have had more. I failed a lot. But with the folks that I did have success with, like, those are the tenets that I was driven by. So, I don't know, man. I just felt like somebody needed to hear that. I've had these conversations with people that have been really intrigued by my thought process or may even been hurt by my focus, because it's selfish. This is how I've tricked myself into doing what I do the way I do it. I am extremely competitive. So if I could get that same urge from coming down a court, taking contact, getting hit, getting bumped, and scoring, right? And winning that game. I felt that if I could feel that way in working with people and being a social worker and working with young people and helping to work with teachers, now being back at a youth organization to do something that's new to me, right? Like, I always get this insatiable, like, appetite to be the best at it. And if you get in the way of that, it's a problem for you. Like, it's a real problem. I've always just believed that. And what happens is you leave people in your wake. And no matter how much you try to warn those people, no matter how much you try to prepare folks, no matter how much you try to just be straight up with people about how you operate and how you move and why you need to move like that. Listen, I don't know another way to do it because I haven't seen anybody else do it any type of different way. From where I come from, that's just not what's happening. That's just not what I saw. So, you know, you just train to like show teeth from where I'm from. And so that's just how I operate. But that's what I'm working on this year. I'm working on how to even be more disciplined. And so you gotta be prepared to go at that stuff alone, man. You gotta, like, my friends know. Will knows, man. Will is my best friend in the world. Knows me better than anybody else. It's probably why God didn't allow that second episode to come out. But he's been my friend since I was a little kid. And he knows, like, all right, man, I'm gonna see Charlesy, and he gonna come, and you know, he gonna play with his nephews, and then he gonna disappear for 3 weeks, because that's just how he rocks. It's not me. It's nothing that I need to take personally. That's just how he gets in his zone, and I think that works, you know. But I'm not satisfied, and it ain't just that house. But when you have somebody that's highly motivated, that is highly competitive and driven, the way that I've been, and I lose daily. Like, it don't take much to motivate you. It don't take much to inspire you. Me not being able to get that house just lit a different type of fire under me, in addition to all the other fires that are there. And if somebody gets in the way, it's a problem. It's going to be a problem. You know, I can put myself, you know, nothing is harder. Like, working late, you know, getting up early, dealing with this knee, which is super frustrating. That's a whole different podcast. But nothing is harder than sleeping in a room with 60 to 100 other families, holding on to my stuff while I sleep, and like having to get in the line to be fed. Like, there's nothing that I've experienced that's harder than that. And if there's anything that I feel is threatening that, it's going to be bad news for whatever that is. And right now, it's whatever it is that's hindering me from getting that thing that I wanted. So, I don't know. But hopefully I can continue to make an impact in the city. We'll see. You know, I'm not afraid to fail, man. And you can't be afraid to go at it alone, because nobody shows up until you start winning. That's always been my experience. You are crazy. Albert Einstein was crazy. Steve Jobs was crazy. Michael Jordan was a lunatic in practice. But when he started winning, everybody wanted a piece of that. And you just got to be resolute in your beliefs and the things that you want. And with that, I know that wasn't funny at all today, huh? I don't know. Well, I made this podcast because I like talking to people and I get to be honest. And so I will be back next week, God willing. I hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope you enjoyed the music, both the beginning and the end, because that's the thing that's about to take me the most time out of all of this. So I would get up with you all. Peace. I'm in a position to talk to these kids and they listen. I ain't no politician, but I kick it with them a minute. Cause see, they call me a menace. And if the shoe fits, I wear it. But if it don't, then y'all will swallow the truth, grin and bear it. Now who's the king of these rude, ludicrous, lucrative lyrics? Who could inherit the title? Put the youth in hysterics, using his music to steer it, sharing his views and his merits. But there's a huge interference. They're saying you shouldn't hear it. Maybe it's hatred I spew. Maybe it's food for the spirit. Maybe it's beautiful music I made for you to just cherish. But I'm
debated, disputed, hated, and viewed in America as a motherfucking drug addict like you didn't experiment. Nah, that's when you start to stare at who's in the mirror and see yourself as a kid again, and you get embarrassed. And I got nothing to do but make you look stupid as parents. You fucking do good, it's too bad you couldn't do good at marriage. And do you have any clue what I had to do to get here? I don't think you do, so stay tuned and keep your ears glued to the stereo, cause here we go. He's jiggin' to a chicken, and I'm the sinister Mr. Kiss. My ass is just a
renegade.
Never been afraid to say what's on my mind at any given time of day, cause I'm a renegade. Never been afraid to talk about anything.
Renegade. Never been afraid to say what's on my mind at any given time of day, cause I'm a renegade.